it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
He got him, and the Red Sox rally from behind and take game one of this wild card 3-1.
The baseball yesterday was outstanding. The pitching all day long, incredible. Started with Skubal in the Tigers game. Excellent sort of collective pitching in the Cubs-Padres game. And then last night, that Yankees-Red Sox game, you knew the environment was going to be amazing. I mean, that place was an unbelievably lit atmosphere. But to have Chapman come in for a four-out save after Garrett Crochet retired 17 consecutive Yankees, but Chapman in the ninth, bases loaded, nobody out, up 3-1, and to get out of it the way he did, it was great sports theater last night. Baseball always provides it this time of year, and day one was really, really good. Good morning, everybody. Yeah, I mean, when they loaded the bases up in the bottom of the ninth with nobody out, I thought for sure something big was coming. Stanton had the first opportunity, and I thought, this is going to light the night up. He's going to hit something out of the park, or he's going to hit, you know, a double, which is going to score two and maybe three and win it. He went down, Chisholm went down, and then Grisham struck out swinging to end the game on a 101-mile-per-hour four-seam fastball. It was riveting last night to watch Chapman go back and beat his former team with a four-out save. When he came in the eighth, there was a runner on, and it really bothered him. He ended up, you know, being charged a base on throwing over for a third time to keep the runner pinned to first. Great, great baseball on day one. We've got another quadruple header today with the same lineup, same order, Detroit-Cleveland, with now Detroit having a chance to eliminate the Guardians, after. I wonder if people in Cleveland deal with it the same way we do. I don't know what the answer to that is. Meaning, when you say Indians, yeah, it's okay. Like you say Redskins, we get it. It's fine. It's fine. I have no idea. But after the historic 15.5 game comeback from July 8th to the American League Central crown, they are on the verge of going down into straight. Cubs, Padres, same thing, and the Yankees will try to stay alive, as will the Reds. The Reds were a massive underdog. I would have much rather. I know a lot of you Nats fans are like, oh, it's so great the Mets didn't make the playoffs. I wanted to see Juan Soto. I wanted to see Soto against the Dodgers. Can't wait to see Bryce against the Dodgers in the next round. Good baseball this time of year. We always forget about it. We'll have hockey a week from tomorrow night and basketball a few weeks away. But will it be easy to watch the Wizards and the Capitals this year? John Oran's going to jump on with us at 11:25 to explain the developing situation, especially for you and me, YouTube TV people, watching our hometown teams when their seasons begin. I got this from, where is it? I had it here a second. I got this from Daniel J. Kevin, the 10-minute overtime is a joke. The new rule is going to lead to situations in which a tie is more probable. Yes, Daniel J., I've been talking about this since they changed the rule. I like the fact that both teams are now going to be guaranteed a possession in the NFL regular season. That rule had changed in the playoffs a few years ago after, remember, New England in Mahomes' first AFC title game, went to overtime, got the ball, and Mahomes never had a chance to touch the football. And then we had the same thing in the Buffalo-Kansas City playoff game, that unbelievable game from a few years ago. Buffalo never had a chance to touch the football. Yeah, I like that they've moved that rule into the regular season, but you can't have it be a 10-minute overtime. Safety is always the, you know, the preference here and is always the default. The problem is that, A, you could potentially end the game on one possession. We saw last Monday night, a week ago Monday night, the Detroit-Baltimore game. We saw the Lions go on an 18-play, 10-minute, 37-second drive. You could do that in overtime, especially if you're intentionally trying to milk the clock. Now, the other team has two timeouts that they can use defensively, and there's a two-minute warning, but you could certainly see and envision an overtime game ending with either a field goal at the gun to win it with the other team not getting a chance. And just so you know, it's a 10-minute overtime. So if somebody takes the ball on the kickoff, and let's just say they after a penalty, they start from their own 11-yard line. So it's a long drive possibility. And they go on a long drive, and the other team burns their timeouts, and you get beyond the two-minute warning. Well, that team on offense is then, if they're in position to do it, they're going to do what they would do at the end of regulation. They're going to take a knee, they're going to run the clock down, and they're going to kick a walk-off field goal. And at that point, no, the rule does not extend the overtime time-wise to guarantee the other team a possession. So actually, the other team isn't guaranteed a possession. They just will get possession if there's time left on the clock. But beyond that, it's not just a walk-off possibility. What if you score a touchdown with a minute 35 left in overtime, or even 2 minutes left, or 2.5 minutes left in overtime? Now the other team has to match for a touchdown in a lot less time, potentially with some timeouts left, maybe not, and they've got to approach that offensive possession much differently. The NFL's got to change this. They've got to go to a 15-minute overtime, or we will end up with the possibility of more ties, meaning, you know, let's just say a long drive ends in a field goal, and then the other team only has time to get in range for a field goal. I thought the Packers were way too passive offensively. If you stayed up and watched the game on Sunday night, Dallas, first of all, decided to kick on a fourth and goal situation when Parsons chased down and tackled Prescott from behind. It actually was registered as a zero gain, but that is a sack by statistical rule, and Parsons was credited with the sack. Dallas decided not to go for it and go for the touchdown. They kicked the field goal. And then Green Bay got very passive on their possession when they got down deep into Dallas territory with still well over a minute to go in the game. And they decided they were going to play almost for either a walk-off touchdown or a walk-off field goal to tie, because they didn't want to end up kicking a field goal and leaving time left for Brandon Aubrey, who now, you know, essentially you're one completion away after a big kickoff return from Turpin from kicking a field goal. You know, that's playing into it too. Now, we have seen in the two overtime games this year, the Giant-Cowboy game and the Cowboy-Packer game, the team that has won the toss has elected to kick, which is exactly what I thought would happen, because you want to know what you need when you get the ball back. And if you get the ball back down three or down seven, you now have four downs. There's an advantage to taking the ball second, unless there's no time left, which is the scenario that I just painted that is possible in a 10-minute overtime. I think we will see teams continue to choose kickoff in overtime. It's the right move. It's the thing that Kyle Shanahan couldn't figure out in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. You kick off because, assuming, and it is more likely than not, you're going to get a possession. When you get that possession, you know exactly what you need. We need a touchdown. We need a field goal. You know, whatever it is, it's the reason that in the college overtime rule, you never take the ball first. You always take the ball second. You have four downs now, not three. Punt is no longer an option if you're behind, for sure. You have the knowledge of exactly what you need. But, yeah, I do think that the NFL in, you know, what they typically do, They will, you know, the default is on safety, and they're concerned about another 5 minutes for, by the way, how many games a year? 10, 12 games a year that would, A, go to overtime and then go beyond 10 minutes in the overtime. Now, with this new rule, it's more likely than not that you would go beyond 10 minutes versus the old rule, but they're going to have to extend it to 15 minutes. I completely agree with you, Daniel J. Appreciate that. From Garrett, Kevin, so we've discussed the problems, but to go full Sheehan, what's the solution to the defense? Yeah, that is kind of, you know, what they have to figure out more than we do. But, of course, we like to play coach and GM when it comes to this sport. And I agree. There's a solution here. First of all, you do have to identify what the problems are to come up with a reasonable solution. And I think that's part of the problem with coming up with the solution. I am not averse to having this conversation and inviting some of your ideas on what the defensive solution is. But you have to identify the problem, and you've got to be sure of what the problem is before you come up with a solution. And I think that's the problem right now. I mean, I have talked to a number of people who have all essentially said the same thing. It's not one thing. It's not Joe Witt Jr. exclusively. It's not Marshawn Lattimore exclusively. It's not Mikey Sanristil playing on the inside versus the outside exclusively. It's not Bobby Wagner being caught in coverage exclusively. It's not Daron Payne having one great game and then missing a bunch of tackles in the next game exclusively. See how I took a shot at one of my favorite players. I did go back and watch the All-22. Daron Payne missed a bunch of tackles. Man, there is nobody that is as good as he is when he's on and as absent at times as he is when he's not. More on that later on. But the issue, at least I believe, based on some of the conversations I've had, is not exclusive to one area.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, that makes it hard to come up with what the solution is. Now, maybe you have a different view, and you've identified the problem. It's Joe Witt Jr.'s scheme. It's Joe Witt Jr.'s play calling. It's Marshawn Lattimore. It's the safeties. It's Quan Martin. He's not, you know, a deep, you know, safety. He's not a free safety. He's really better in the box. Whatever you think it is. I think there are a couple of issues here. I think that, number one, when you see that much coverage miscommunication, there is an element of coach scheme play calling involved, because it's not been just one player that has struggled in coverage. We've had a couple of players. The safeties have struggled. Will Harris, you know, is going to be a loss and will be felt. But in that Green Bay game, he got fooled multiple times by the Packers, you know, where he thought, you know, I'm in run fit, when actually here goes Tucker Kraft right by him. And Tucker Kraft was his responsibility. So I think that coverage and the miscommunications and the issues they've had in coverage, some of that has to speak to, is it too complicated? Is it the right scheme? Is it the right play call? Is it the right play call for some situations, but not for that particular situation? Why are we having Marshawn Lattimore exclusively identified as, we can't let him press off the line of scrimmage, so we're going to motion to death this team because we know they're not going to pass him off. We know that they're not going to switch, in a basketball term. You know, there's some element of that. There's no doubt in my mind. The other part, though, is yes, bad tackling can be a coaching issue, but it can also be a personnel issue, an execution issue. They were a bad tackling team on Sunday. Bad. Against a team that you couldn't be a bad tackling team against. You can't bad tackle Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier and expect to get off the field, you know, and force punts. There were two punts in the game. And let's face it, one of them was at the end of the first half when Atlanta really wasn't trying to score at the very end when they gave up on that opportunity. So it was really one legitimate punt in the game. You're not going to win many games unless you get turnovers forcing the other team to punt once in a game. So I think the problem is multi. I think it's all over the place. I also think that they've improved in an area in which they were really, really bad last year. They're a better run-stopping team this year than they were last year. And watching the All-22 of the game, you know, one of our callers, Aveen, who's always got a pretty sharp opinion, and he said, you know, I'm actually not that concerned about the run defense after Sunday. There were a lot of really good run stops in the game. You just played a special running back in Bijan Robinson who can make people miss, who can break tackles, etc. But they were there for a lot of the stops. And I think that's true now. I think in looking at the game a little bit more closely, they had a chance to have a much better run-stopping day. It also could have been worse had they, you know, it could have been worse in that Atlanta really did seem to catch them at times in defenses where Bijan had even bigger opportunities. But what I was going to say is this. The tackling was bad. The run fit consistency wasn't. They were there for a lot of plays, and they had six tackles for loss in the game on rundowns. That's really impressive. You know, take away the one sack in the game, which was Luvu's sack. Wagner, Lattimore, actually, Dorrance Armstrong, Kinlaw, that was a memorable one. Paynes was the play on Bijan Robinson that forced the fumble. And then Eddie Goldman on a third and one. And there were other opportunities. So I do think that through four games, I feel better about their ability to stop the run. Or I'm not going to tell you that they're going to be a great run-stopping team or even a good run-stopping team, but they're going to be a lot better than they were last year, and that was the biggest issue on defense, was stopping the run. This year, through four games, it appears that the bigger issue is in coverage. So what's the solution? For me, I think the coverage issue is the issue. I'm going to give you some of my conversation with Fred Smoot the other day, who came up with a bit of a solution and a plan. And I'll just share some of it with you. And it was to simplify everything. That's always kind of a default on when things are going wrong. Let's simplify it, especially when you've got younger players. Not that Washington has younger players. They've got one super young player, two of them, really, and Sanra Still and Amos in the back end. I would suggest the following, and I'm not even sure I'm right about this, but I think they're better against the run. They've been very porous in coverage. For me, in looking at the coverage, the worst cover guy, whether it's because of motions, whether it's because of scheme, but even when he is lined up and playing press, Marshawn Lattimore has been the weakest corner for this team. And yes, it's not looking great in terms of, you know, the trade, which, again, I would never go back in 2020 hindsight this thing. I loved the trade in the moment. I thought this is a recalibration of the recalibration. They should be going for it. And it's not a rental. If it had been a rental, I would have had a problem with it in the moment. It wasn't a rental. This guy had contract life left. And the issue with him was just being healthy. Wasn't healthy last year, is healthy this year, and isn't performing at a high level. I'm not discounting the real possibility that part of this is on scheme, play calling, etc. I think there's probably some of that involved. But if you ask me for one thing that I wouldn't have a problem if they ended up doing it, it would be to bench Marshon Lattimore, move Sanristil outside, and bring in Igben Ogeni to play the slot as he did last year before the trade. You know, I also think there's a bit of a safety issue without Will Harris. I agree Quan Martin's not playing at the level I thought he was playing at the end of last year. You know, Jeremy Reeves is certainly a hustler and a hitter, but the safety position is a bit dicey right now. Maybe Darnell Savage can help on that end in the coming weeks as he gets more acclimated. Maybe Tyler Owens has to play more. But if you're asking me to, I have to give at least one answer to a solution defensively. I'm just going to go with, I think Marshon Lattimore is playing poorly, whether it's scheme issued or not. And I would look to move him to the bench and go with Mikey Sanristil, who played very well on the outside last year, and with Trey Amos, and then bringing in Noah Ai as my nickel corner. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. I want one thing that you would do defensively to try to improve the situation, which right now, in this moment, after the game on Sunday against Atlanta, looks like it's developed into the weakness and the issue with the team for the second consecutive year. Defense was the weakness last year. I know that there were outstanding performances against the Giants, to the Raiders, lesser extent with the Raiders. The Raiders had some big plays. They had some big plays in the passing game. We know that. Now, Will Harris left the game, and maybe it was an adjustment there that they couldn't make in-game. But I want one thing that you feel confident would be a part of the solution defensively. I gave you mine, and I'm hesitant to give it because I think, I believe that what I've heard, that this is not just one issue. And by the way, I think in Quinn's tone, in the way he spoke after the game and the way he spoke on Monday, I think you recognize that he is concerned about some of the things that are going on defensively. Look, there are extreme measurements. This team's already, by the way, proven they'll make changes if they think there are issues. We've seen it on offense. Brandon Coleman inactive, and Chris Paul in, Allegretti benched, Andrew Wiley in. So I'm not going to be surprised if on Sunday there is a surprise development with personnel on defense. But, you know, the extreme would be, and I don't even think this is a possibility, to fire Joe Witt Jr. I do not think that's a possibility. What would be an extreme, and I don't think this is a great possibility, but I would not discount it if there's another two or three games like the game on Sunday against Atlanta, especially if they lose some of those games because of their defense, to see Dan Quinn take play calling responsibilities defensively. You know, this is the first job he's had in which he hasn't done that. That's not what my one solution would be right now. If I had to go to one, because you're forcing me to pick one, I think Lattimore is struggling. And I'm sure it's not all him, but he has struggled more than anybody else. Maybe Quan Martin, you know, maybe the safeties in general, but Marshon Lattimore would be the one that I would say, all right, I have to make one change. I'm moving Sanristil back outside, and I'm moving Noah Ai into the slot. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. I want one solution. You have to come up with one idea to fix the defense. What's that one idea? Kevin Sheehan Show right here on the Team 980. We're also on the Odyssey app. If you want to download that, you can listen to us wherever you are, wherever you go. And you can watch this show on the Team 980's YouTube channel. Just hit the subscribe button and the like button when you get there.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.